So it's got to be 2008. And I go on a video shooting spree. Joey Karate's and all these fucking videos. So one day I got an idea. I go, let me go, I'm going to shoot a video in the fucking YMCA. And I got a towel and I put a Jewish star on it. Right? Like the Jews do. And I sat there and I had a yarmulke. But before I go over, I get my man Damon stoned to the gills. It was Super Silver Haze from the place on Sierra Bonita.
Yeah.
That sold tremendous weed. The big fat dude, Pete, whatever his name was, he had weed that was deadly. And on Tuesdays, he had a chef from where Nicole Brown got killed, that Mezzaluna.
Oh, shit.
He was the pastry chef, and he had just opened up an edible company. So he was making tiramisu and all these exotic fucking things. And he used to make this real, at those days, there was no milligrams on edibles. So I give Damon an edible.
And you didn't know which half was the better half.
Which half was the better half. So I eat the edible with Damon. We wait about 20 minutes. I look at Damon's face. I can tell he's higher than fuck. And our goal is to go into the YMCA. I'm going to get naked, put the towel on.
Jesus.
I'm going to put the yarmulke on, and then I'm going to go into the steam room. And I'm going to open up the door, and he's going to come in and shoot me, and I'm going to give the weekly picks, whatever the fuck I was doing at the time. So one thing leads to another. We walk into the Y, give him the badge. We go in, and I can tell as soon as we walk in, after about 9 o'clock, because I said, let's go after 9, because the Y is open till 11. I go, let's go after 9, because then it slows down.
Yeah.
But after 9, anybody who knows, it's gay guys that go down there, and they walk around naked, and they try to hit on other guys. So you're at the Y in Hollywood. And
after 9?
A guy will walk right past you with his dick out and go, excuse me. And you're like, why are you naked in the back? But you got to figure, like, this night I would go in there at 4:45, and there'd be a guy coming down from meth, naked as fuck, on a towel, looking to get his dick sucked. And I'd go in and go, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
And there was one time I had words with a guy. One time I said, bro, you got to put your towel on. And he goes, does my dick bother you? I go, bro, you got to put your fucking towel on. You're a perverted motherfucker. You want me to go to the front desk? And he put his towel on.
But also, like, there's this also a certain age. Like, when dudes go past the age of 70, those guys never wear a fucking towel.
So I take Damon down there. I can see he's spooked. I go to open up the steam because it's his fits.
Yeah.
And then there's a steam. And the steam, you can't really look in. All you see is steam.
Yeah.
So when you open it, the steam clears and you can see. So Damon's got his head over my shoulder. I open the door, the steam clears, and it's the biggest, blackest motherfucker you've ever seen with a dick that had to be cold, but it was still 22 inches. Damon saw the guy's dick and ran the fuck out of there. I had to put my towel on and chase him. I go, what's going on? He goes, that guy's dick was too big. Greetings from Podcastville, you bad motherfuckers. It's Tuesday, the 11th of motherfucking July. The podcast is brought to you by Onnit, the best in supplements. Listen, I can't take care of you on the supplements, and I can't take care of you on the kettlebell and the club bells and all that stuff. But as far as supplements, I got you. Alpha Brain, Shroom Tech, the protein powder, I got you. Go to Onnit.com. Pick something. Start with Alpha Brain. Press in Onnit and get 10% off. Press in.
Church.
Bam! And get 10% off delivered to your fucking house right off the bat. Number two, the days of buying CBD oil at a liquor store are done. CBD Lion is here. Let me explain something to you. Go to CBD Lion and look at the secondhand test results. This is a real fucking company with legit product. I'm 56 fucking years old. I jump up and down every fucking day. I eat four of those little gummies at night, and I sleep like a fucking lion. You understand me? If you want to sleep like a lion, go to CBDLion.com right now and press in.
Church.
And get 20 motherfucking percent off. That's how we do it on the Church of What's Happening Now. Take this fucking mule, Lee. Oh, shit. Oh, shit. Time to take some fucking fentanyl.
Oh, yeah.
Boom. The Church of What's Happening Now, motherfuckers. It's a Jew fest in this bitch. I got Josh Wolf. I got the Flying Jew, a.k.a. the Christ Killer. It's 104 degrees, cocksuckers. We love you.
France, a skinny man died of a big disease with a little name. By chance, his girlfriend came across a needle, and soon she did the same. At home, there were 17-year-old
boys,
and
nuts,
there I did
one.
is being in a gang called the Disciples, high on crack, toting a machine gun.
There you go, there you go. As good as it fucking gets. Smooth.
Time.
It's the Church of What's Happened Now. It's Tuesday. Listen, I'm sorry, Atlanta. I'm very sorry. I'm going to reschedule a date today. I'm sorry about what happened on Saturday. For you people who want to know what really happened was that our flight was at 11:30. It's supposed to get into fucking Atlanta at 2:19. And they kept pushing the flight back. And then at 3 o'clock, they just canceled them. No, at 5 o'clock, they just canceled the motherfucker. And the next flight was at 6:09. And that got delayed till 7:22. So we weren't going to get in till 10. I didn't want you people to sit there for fucking 3 hours. So my deepest motherfucking apologies. Once I got to Atlanta, guess what? They left my luggage in New Orleans. So I had to sit there till 5 in the morning and wait for my fucking luggage.
What airline is that?
Delta, who I love to death. Everybody has a bad day.
Yeah.
You know, I was not angry. Steve Simone started to get a little bit angry at the counter, and I reminded him about Ralphie May was banned for life.
What?
Yeah, from Delta. For kicking the counter at fucking LAX, because he got there 30 minutes before the flight.
Yeah.
And he missed it, because he was a big shot. And he kicked the counter, and he said, fucking, this sucks. And they came and said, don't ever come into Delta again.
Get the fuck out.
Don't play at an airport. Do not play at an airport. When people tell me they play at an airport, I feel sorry for them. The TSA people have no time, and the airline people have no time.
Yeah.
Keep your mouth shut. Don't crack no fucking jokes.
Well, the jokes
don't
dumb.
Say nothing about dynamite. Don't say nothing about fucking going through the machine. Just wear sweats so you don't have to take your belt off if you're a fat fuck. Put some nice NB, what do you call it, New Balance sneakers.
Yeah, slip them on.
Be prepared to walk. Slip them on. And take a shirt and take a hooded sweatshirt if it's cold on the plane. And make sure in your fucking bag that you're carrying on, you have the essentials. You always have to have a joint rolled up and hidden a certain way in case your luggage gets lost. You don't want to sit in your room like a fucking bumpy. So thank God I had edibles on me. I had some fucking reefer on me. And I had a vapor pen on me. That shit, and I had my computer. So I never get stuck. I wasn't really stuck. I took a shower. I didn't have no fucking gel to put on my hair. I looked like fucking Zombo. But I was still going to fly. I didn't give a fuck, Jack, where my fucking luggage was. They can't get in it because I got it locked. I got one of those away suitcases that... they're guaranteed for life, and it comes with a combination.
You put on the plane?
Well, I could even plug my phone on that bitch. You know that. You can charge your phone. It's tremendous. And I've had it for 2 months. You got to see what it looks like. Looks like it went through Afghanistan, and they shot it. Looks like one of those Goodfella cars. They treat your luggage like shit, those fucking animals.
Oh, yeah. You know, they lost my bag.
And then they wanted receipts.
They wanted receipts. They lost my bag, and I was like, listen, they said anything over $150... that was in the suitcase, we're going to need receipts. I'm like, well, there was some clothing in there. The jeans, some of the shoes.
They give you?
Here's the thing, right? So I said, they were over $150. They said, we're going to need receipts for those. And I said, yeah, but I've had them for like a year. You know what I mean? You think I keep the receipts for, once I get clothes, if I know I'm going to keep them, I throw away the fucking receipt. And they were like, yeah, it's just the policy. I said, but what about the clothes you're wearing? You like them? And she said, yeah. And I said, do you have any receipts for those? She said, no. But I didn't lose these clothes. I'm like, okay. So they made me do receipts, which I didn't fucking have. And so then they were like, we'll give you something like $400 for the bag and everything. That's it. But then I have to go down someplace and sign some paperwork.
Yeah. Oh, no. They make it rough for you. Yeah. They put you on hold. It's an hour. They make it rough for you. Let me tell you something, how I feel. And I told the lady when she called me at 3, and she goes, your luggage didn't come. And I go, let me ask you a question, because this is what pisses me off, okay? This is what part of my beef is with society, and we've accepted it, is that I paid you $25 for that bag.
Yeah.
That means you're going to handle that bag with your life. If not, don't charge me, and I'll expect to lose it. But once I pay that $25, you know they charged me $100.
Why?
Because my bag was 2 pounds over.
They don't fuck around.
And I didn't have another bag, and I wasn't in the mood to argue. Listen, when I fly on Sunday, I don't want to argue.
Yeah.
I don't want to stand in the line.
You first flight guy?
Yeah, first flight guy. And this would kill me this week. I didn't take the first flight out. You take the first flight out. That's why I don't like doing city to city. I like one city at a fucking time.
Yep.
You know what? When I get fucking Ali Wong, and then I could do two shows in the night, then I'll But until then, I don't want to go from city to city. It bothers the fuck out of me. It really does.
But that's also early flight after early flight is not good.
Well, if you take the early flight and you get to a town, they're not going to check you in your room.
Yeah.
Right.
You're going to be walking around the town like a fucking staminka. I don't want to do that either. I don't want to do the only one that has an early check-in is Hyatt. And they'll give it to you. They'll check you in at 9. They don't fuck around. I'm like platinum on Hyatt.
Yeah. So just but that's why, like, if you... I would think most airlines, you wouldn't have to pay if your bag was over 50 pounds.
They got me on the way back from Minneapolis that week when I did Wisconsin, when I was shooting the movie in Jersey. The first week, I had already 420 in Minneapolis and Milwaukee at the Paps. On the way home from the Paps, somebody gave me something, like a sweatshirt or something. I left my kickboxing stuff at my friend's car.
Yeah.
But I forgot to take clothes out of there.
Got it.
So when I went, I don't know why they didn't charge me when I came back. Lady goes, you're 2 pounds over. And I just paid the yardstick. Because I don't want to argue with you. It's not worth it. I don't want to get
not on a Sunday morning. Yeah.
I don't want to argue with nobody on a Sunday morning. Yeah. I just did 5 fucking shows. I just took pictures. I talked to people. I heard people's stories. You know, I'm not in the mood. So that's... I just feel if I pay you $25 to handle something, so how can my luggage still fucking be in fucking whatever?
But there are also, like, you fly as much as I do. There's some things on a plane too, like when somebody tries to fit an overhead bag the size of a fucking coffin in the overhead, and they're just slamming.
I got a problem with the guitar guys. Take that guitar and shove it up your mother's ass.
Check it underneath.
Do not fucking bring the guitar on here. You're not going to serenade nobody. You're just going to waste the fucking bit with your fucking shitty band and your shitty fucking guitar. Check that fucking thing. It burns me the fuck up when I see some fucking guy with a guitar and I don't know who it is. If it ain't Jimmy Page, don't bring a guitar on the plane. If you ain't Dave Gilmore or Jimmy Page or you ain't in the Foo Fighters, leave your guitar, all right? Nobody knows you. Don't bring the guitar on to make believe. Like, we're going to confuse you for somebody you're not. You're not in the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Leave your fucking guitar underneath. And then you sit in the back. That's what really pisses me off. You want to bring a guitar? Buy a first-class ticket. So now you're going to fucking sit in the back with those Martians in the dungeon and fuck their shit up. Like, they don't have it bad enough. You ever sit in first class and get up and look into the back of a plane? You advise people on not flying what you see. You see people stuck together. Even that seat behind first class, the more leg room.
Yeah.
They give you dick.
Nah.
You're still sitting next to two fucking idiots breathing on your neck. It's a fucking nightmare. It's a fucking nightmare. I feel bad for people that don't fly when they fly. And they tell them, we're going to have a great time.
Yeah.
You're sitting back there fucking stuck. My wife, she's in for a treat. And she doesn't know.
Why?
Because she's going to Tennessee, to Nashville.
When's she going?
But she came to me with the amount for the plane tickets for the American, and I told her absolutely. They wanted $700.
Yeah.
To go sit in the back on American Airlines to go to Nashville, because every fucking star in the country lives in Nashville now. So if you go to Nashville.
Especially nonstop,
you
right?
You have to. I could get a cheaper Mint ticket to Kennedy than what it is to fly.
Yeah. I have to go. Nashville. I have to fly back from Nashville. Well, when does this come out?
Tomorrow.
I have to fly back from Nashville this weekend. This weekend? Sunday. Next weekend. And I looked at that flight and I'm like, what? One way, because it was like $600.
There's two places that they rape you. And I can't figure out. Well, I know one place, Nashville.
Yeah.
Because the movie stars, when you get on the ATL, also they rape you a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you what's the fucking other place where they rape you to go to. Philadelphia.
Come on.
Have you ever seen what a ticket to Philadelphia cost?
Yeah, I mean, I do it once a year.
I look at the first class, the regular, and the business, and I go, holy shit. Every year I save points just to go to Philly, just to fuck them. Just to fuck them. Like, I got miles for you. Do you want a coach seat? First class. I got 50,000. I'm covered. Listen, and then you can hear the crack over the phone.
Joe, on the way back from New Zealand, the guy says to me, I'm checking in. He said, we have one more first class seat available. Do you want to take it? And I was like, you know what? because it would have been, it was like, I go, how much American to upgrade? And he was like, $1,100. And I was like, you know what? I've never done something like that. I'm going to fucking do it. It changed the entire experience. I never wanted to get off the plane.
It was how many hours?
15 hours.
You do anything 15 hours. Yeah. You got to take care of yourself.
Yeah. You know what? It's not something I would usually spend money on. Honestly, I would be like, no, that's way too much. But it had been such a long trip. I was gone for almost 3 weeks. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to fucking, I worked hard this trip. I'm putting on a card. I'm going, it was, I would do it again. It changed the whole, the trip there, I was in the back. The trip back, I was in the front. It changed.
Where's your wife?
She stayed home. She was selling, because we were selling the house.
Okay. Oh, so she didn't go to New Zealand.
No, it was just me.
I thought she was going to go.
She was going to go.
So you ended up making money.
Yeah.
Yeah, you bring your wife, you break even. Yeah. That's what I told you.
Yeah.
Remember, you remember how bad I was with money?
Yeah.
And then I used to talk to you and go, what the fuck? And the day you justified your girlfriend taking $20 out of the bank every day,
oh my God.
Listened to you and I'm like, you know, he's a cheap fuck, but he's right.
Yeah.
$20 every day for lunch. $20. It fucking adds up. That's 600 a fucking month.
Oh, my God. You know what? But that's the thing. Like, nothing. I would rather you buy something big than nickel and dime me to death. Do you know what I mean? It's just that is just a slow, it's like the Chinese torture. Just watching it go at $20 a bit, because you know I was checking it every 30, 40 minutes.
That's a good one. A little garlic for you there. You eat yet? You eat yet?
Yeah.
All right. No, see, I know you didn't eat, so you can smell that.
Oh, my God.
That's like a food substitute.
But you.
My farts, it's got protein in it.
Carol was tight on money.
Who?
Carol.
Oh, she still has the first.
She was tight. She was the tightest person I've ever met in my life. She was tight.
Listen, it's tight for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
I tip. I leave tips in hotel rooms.
Yeah.
I spread it. That's always been, even when I didn't have it, always spread it. That's why I have the friends I have. Because when I rob somebody, I'd make you a conspiracy, whether you wanted to or not. When Lee came up to you later and goes, Joe Diaz robbed my house. And you're like, he gave me $300. You couldn't say nothing because you know 300 of your money was Lee's pocket. You know what I'm saying? Or vice versa. So I would make you a conspiracy right off the bat. You didn't even need to do nothing around me. I just throw you $200, and a week later you're like, Joey Diaz robbed my house. He took my fucking pound of coke. And you're like,
God,
he came over and left me a gram of coke. No wonder.
God.
Now I can't even fucking say nothing because I'm responsible. You called me from New Zealand. And it was one of the most interesting calls I've had in a long time. Because one thing I really, really am, and I'm not saying this for the podcast or whatever, is very humbled and thankful.
Yeah.
Very humbled and thankful. I know that this ends. I know that I'm not better than nobody else. I know I put my pants on one leg at a time like everybody else. I just put in the fucking work, you know. You and I go back, if you really think about it, to 1995.
Yeah.
This is 2018. That means we were doing comedy and you called me and you said, I'm here in New Zealand. I'm walking the streets in New Zealand. And I'm thinking about how much time I put into this to get here and how happy I am. And I might not be making a lot of money. And I got off the phone with you and I'm like, you know, he's getting it. There's one, when you come to LA, there's two reasons to come to LA. There's the reason to be a star. And for me, it was just to survive. I never thought I was good enough to get a movie. I always thought I would get a, I remember Valerie. Mm-hmm. Valerie, whatever, telling me, I get you a job as an extra. I'm like, really? And she's like, yeah, I'm working on Friends. Remember, she used to leave animals on the set and play with them so they could. She'd tell her mom that she left a thing on the set, and while you were watching it, the fucking head would be moving. Fucking hilarious. I thought I'd be an extra. So I just wanted to survive. There's people who come here, they're going to be stars, they become stars, and they get a shock of fucking reality. They get a little knockout to the head. And then they either smooth it out or they go away.
Yeah.
60% of them go away because they can't handle the fucking failure. 40% say, you know what? At the end of the day, I was a stand-up anyway. I didn't come here to make movies or TV shows or to have a show. I came here just to be a fucking comic.
Mm-hmm.
And when you really grab that, whether you're a comic or a lawyer, when you really see the work that you've put into something, it's hard to believe. And it came to you in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Chelsea, this, that, Greg Garcia, you know, you opened up for these guys. This has all been part of your fucking journey. That's why I explain to people that they have to have a comedy journey. You know, if do you think I would have handled this the way I did if I didn't do comedy for 20 years this weekend? Most comics would have had a heart attack if they missed their flight, whatever. That's normal. I know what you can and you can't do. If you rush it, you're just going to put on a bad show. Like, and you know, the agents were like, you know, they'll wait till 10. And I'm like, I wouldn't wait for Led Zeppelin for 3 hours.
Yeah.
Never mind some fat fucking comic that's going to say dirty fucking words. Reschedule it. I don't want to go there and with a gun to my head. I don't want to run there and be in a rush. And look, thank God I didn't say to wait because my luggage never got there. This is things you learn from doing comedy. And I told Jeff Wills today. I go, Jeff, my apologies to you for not doing the show. But I've learned something when I was a kid. That if something sucks in the beginning, it's going to suck all the way through.
Yeah.
Only an idiot doesn't know that. If something sucks the very first moment, it's going to suck all the way through. This flight already started bad. It's delayed. It's been delayed 3 times.
Yep.
What does that tell you? That tells you something ain't right. Whatever you got to go to that funeral, you ain't going to make
it. Nope.
You're not going to make it. Sit back, go to the bar if you need a cocktail. For me, I just popped an edible. I just popped 100 milligram.
Dude, you know what else, though? You know what, from being on stage so long, and this dawned on me the other day. If I list the things that have happened to me while I've been on stage, electricity going out, mics going out, you know, the whole building going out, people fighting in the audience, people throwing up on the stage, somebody have sex in the audience, you know, you could name almost anything, right? And because almost anything has happened, it dawned on me a couple of years ago, and it something shifted in the way I do stand up. You can't surprise me with anything. Do you know what I mean? I feel almost more comfortable on stage than I do off. I'm in a way more sure of myself and what's going to happen. You know what I mean? Like I feel almost more comfortable standing up there than sometimes I do off. I feel like I know what's going to happen. Do you know what I mean? When I go on the road, I know. Even if something weird happened, I've seen so, it's hard to,
what,
like,
about the first time you saw a woman's pussy from the stage?
Yeah.
Remember you couldn't say the joke afterward? You were just like, yeah, I was having a good time.
Joe.
I remember there was a time when once a month I had a girl, those triple runs.
Yeah.
They have the girl, the people go to throw you off. And on those triple runs, once a month, there's always that one hot girl that shows up with a guy and doesn't wear underwear. And she just opens her leg throughout the whole show. And you look at it because that's what you do.
Yeah.
With Me Too's.
Yeah.
You got to look. You know what I'm saying? But after a while, you're like, I can't look because she knows. She's smiling.
Yeah.
The boyfriend is in love. He's like, my wife is the hottest thing. Meanwhile, she's showing you that plan. And it's fucking throws you off. The first time, you're like you fucking actually go. And people, and you're like, sorry, I just had a little brain fart. No, you didn't. You just saw somebody snatch. And she saw it. She saw how you reacted. So now she's going to open up her legs more. That threw me off the first time. Something as simple as that. I used to get thrown off by people with white hair.
Really?
If I looked out in the audience and I saw a guy with hair like
that. Why? Because they didn't think you didn't think they'd get the jokes?
I didn't think I'd get them.
Yeah.
I didn't think. I thought.
That used to throw me too.
Like, there were so many things I would put on my act. And in life, it's the same things we do in life. We put roadblocks in front of ourselves.
Joe, in Cleveland, last time I was there, or 2 times ago, there was a guy in the second row finger banging the girl next to him. Not subtly. He was a full arm length away. So he looked like a DJ scratching a record. That's how subtle it was from the stage. And I'm looking at it. And I didn't say anything because, honestly, it just gave me something different to look at. I see everything. You know what I mean? I'm like, I've never seen that at a show before. Finger banging this girl. They ended up getting kicked out for something completely different because he ended up talking at the show. But I asked everybody in the crowd, I'm like, did you guys see that? And they were like, fuck. Yes, with the whole crowd. But we just went on with the, You know what I mean? Like, what am I going to do? Hey, you're finger banging that girl. Like, what am I going to say? I don't want to embarrass them. It's actually kind of funny to me. What the fuck? But that's what I mean. Like, at Comics in Mohegan, there was a woman in the front row. This is on, the video is on my YouTube page. I just happened to tape the show. She threw up in her cup. It was an empty giant margarita cup. She threw up in it four times, but like this. She would go like this, ready? And just because she didn't want to get kicked out of the show. So she would throw up in her mouth, hold it in her mouth. No liquid came out. And then she would just open her mouth like baby bird, you know, like you would feed a baby bird and drop it into the cup. She did it one time. Her friend leaned over, and this is on the video too. Her friend leaned over to say something. I thought she was going to say, hey, we should get you out of here. And she leaned over. They were right up front. They were nurses. And she leaned over and she goes, get your shit together. And she threw up in the cup three times maybe. And I finally had to kick her out, not because she was disrupting the show, because nobody besides me and her friend saw her. Nobody in the whole show. I had to kick her out because she filled up the cup. I didn't want her to throw it up on the ground and making the wait staff clean it up, right? So she walks out. And I asked,
did you bring the cup with her? Or did you leave
the cup? No, she left the cup. So surely, if they didn't saw the finger bang, surely everybody saw this woman in the front row. They were like, nobody saw anything. She was so stealth. She wanted to stay. So honestly, I felt bad asking her to leave because she was trying so hard to stay. You know what I mean? She was putting in 100, so...
I had a lady in the front row puke on the stage.
Where were you?
Houston. Mo Amir was here 2 weeks ago, and I wanted to tell him the story.
Which club?
Not the lap stop or the lap spot. This was the one where he developed that with the Spanish one on the other side of town where him, Ralphie, Thea Vidal. That club was a little bit more raw.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the lap stop were white people, very nice. You know, it's... Wes Gray, very nice. Two Starbucks on the corner. Mm-hmm. But the joke joint. Today it's the joke joint. That's what they call it. The joke joint.
Right.
That was called, Danny Martinez owned it. And one time he said, I want you to headline here. And he didn't show up on Friday. His wife was there. She wouldn't let me work dirty. I'm struggling. And then fucking towards the end of my set, I see this lady put her hand up. And the puke went between her fingers.
Oh, no.
And then she removed the hand, and she just went blah, all over the front table and on the stage. I did about 2 minutes, and the smell of vomit. Everybody fucking around just started walking out. You have to be a trooper to live through that on stage. You just throw your hands up, and you go back to your room and go, what the fuck was that?
Ever. I can tell you the closest I've been to walking off stage. I was in Myrtle Beach, and these people were talking in the audience, and I was kind of talking to them, and then another table got tired of them talking too, and then they started to argue with each other, and there was nobody from the staff coming in to break it up, and nothing I was saying was that. I just sat on the stage and watched them argue and pretend fight. It had to be 5 minutes. And I was like, I couldn't at the time figure out how to control it. And I was like, do I just walk off the fucking stage? Like, I've literally lost control of this show. I can't get either table to calm down. And then other people are screaming at the tables and I can't control the crowd at all. And I just sat there. And it was the closest I've ever been to saying, fuck this. If this is going to be the whole show and I can't control it, I got to walk off. I just sat. I ordered a couple drinks and just sat and waited for them to get tired of yelling at each other. But I didn't know. That was the closest I've ever been to walking off. You ever been close?
No. I've never been close to walking off. Like I've had my moments when I want to cry.
Yeah.
Up on stage where like you're either doing really bad, just not getting them, or they're just not taking the ride. But when I was doing coke, I had a bad attitude on stage because all I would think about was going on stage and doing 45 minutes, so I'd go do coke.
How did that change your, how did that?
The quicker I got off stage, the quicker I could get to my fucking little voodoo bag of debt. So I had that problem for a long time, and I just wanted to fulfill my obligation. I didn't really give a fuck about what I talked about on stage, and that's why I really had no success at that area, even though I was doing movies and stuff. I really had no control. I was just doing it to go on the road and not, you know, when you have an addiction, you go on the road and nobody knows about it. Here, I would do it once a week here. When I was on the road, it was every night, you know, Wednesday through Sunday. I mean, you still remember Beaumont.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was just, you know, I think about Beaumont and I want to get sick. You that know, was it took amazing. Me a week from the OD on Sunday to Friday. My face was bent. Like, my face was bent for five fucking days. I couldn't talk.
Yeah.
I was like, how you doing?
Yeah.
My wife's like, what's going on with you? I go, nothing. I got a toothache. It was fucking terrible.
Yeah.
Like, I can't explain to people. Didn't I lay down at one point on stage?
On stage. And you said to me, Josh Wolf. Josh Wolf. And I was in the back. I go, yeah. And you go, come up here and help me get on the stool. And I go, no. And you were like, fuck you. But you were on your knees. You weren't laying down. You were on your knees.
400 pounds.
And you had the mic resting on your belly.
I'm in my
I remember that.
Shirt.
I couldn't drenched. Help you onto the fucking stool.
My fucking shirt was drenched. Yeah. I had one of those big daddy shirts on.
You took those Xanax before you went on stage. No, you took the Xanax before I went on stage.
30 of them. 30 of them?
Yeah, you took them before I went on stage.
30 of them in 3 days.
Yeah.
10 milligram Xanax I was eating. And the last night I definitely ate 10 or 12.
You were, I don't think, but you know what's crazy? It didn't kill you. Is it bad?
No.
No, he just eats fish and protein shakes all day. That's not a bad fart at all. God damn it. That's all he does is he thinks about what he can eat to make fart smell bad.
You know, we did that in college. In college, we were fucking dumb. Basically, my roommate challenged another two guys. We were like, we're going to lock ourselves in our rooms for a weekend. We're going to eat the worst things in the world. And we're gonna see once and for all who's got the worst room. And I didn't make it the whole weekend. I think I woke up on Saturday. I had to make it till like Sunday at 8. I woke up on Sunday morning. And I was like, I can't. This is as far as I go.
But he's 2.5 times as old as you were at that point.
Yeah, so, but he's done some damage. And at this point, he knows exactly what makes him fart the worst.
Who?
Garlic.
You.
Garlic. What is it, fish?
Oh, albacore sushi.
Yeah.
It's like I'm a mind reader.
With onions, jalapenos, and garlic cloves.
Oh, that's the end.
The first two or three farts are Karnak. Just brutal. Karnak. They're just brutal. When I go to Sushi Dan, I mean, I haven't been there in like 2 or 3 weeks. But when I go to Sushi Dan, I get the sizzling albacore. It's 6 pieces of albacore, just with onions, jalapeno, and fucking garlic cloves and a little bit of olive oil. And it's delicious. But what comes out of your ass 2 hours later is just disgusting. Once the onion mixes with the fucking garlic, you have a big problem. And then the jalapeno makes the fart spicy.
Heart.
Like you know people what, sniff it and their nose hairs go on.
Yeah, and it feels like a paper cut when it comes out of your asshole.
Oh.
Like you're like, oh shit.
No, it's
like
terrible.
The paper cut. Yeah, those are bad.
It's terrible. Well, I don't eat to fart. I don't know when I'm gonna fart.
Yeah.
For me, dried apricots. Like if I want to torture Beth, I'll just buy a bag of dried apricots and I hide them at the house. And if she's bothering me, I'll go eat some dried apricots.
There's that place on Lancashire. They make protein shakes once every 2 weeks to break the monotony. I go over there. It's not going to be a good protein shake for you because they put fruit in it. So there's a lot of sugar in it.
Right.
But just to switch it up, it's called Maca Fuel.
Yeah.
It's a chocolate milkshake over there on Lancashire. They put dates in there.
That'll fuck you
Let
up too.
Let me tell you something.
Yep.
You have no idea
that's me
what
too.
Comes out of you when you eat dates.
Yeah.
The odor, that's why I had to stop going there.
It's rough.
Because I would have the shakes and go, Jesus Christ. I would be driving back from the Comedy Store at night and I would fart on Laurel Canyon and almost crash the fucking car.
You ever fart in your car and keep the windows rolled up and see if it smells in the next morning?
No.
I like to do that. No. Do you ever do that?
No.
I don't do it. I just did it by accident.
I don't want to do that. I don't definitely want my car to smell like shit. I hate my car stinking. I got to go in there with Osium anyway.
Oh, yeah.
I go in there with Osium every fucking day. When I start it up, I blow it and put Osium in there to kill the Espiritos Malos and everything fucking in between. You know what I'm saying? So now you're going to the UK. And these are both your first times doing comedy abroad. Yeah. What did you feel was different when you went abroad?
I was really scared.
In my world, people are people.
Yeah.
After 20 years, you realize people are people. No matter whether you go to a tent, if you ain't funny, they ain't gonna laugh.
So, yeah, I agree with you 100%. But sometimes, I was going by myself, so I did a lot of thinking. And sometimes, you know, your old insecurities or who you used to be can creep in and bring some self-doubt. And I started to think, well, is the sense of humor the same? I mean, I know what I'm, you know, and I just started to creep into my own head. And I couldn't wait just to get that first set out of the way. And as soon as I got the first set out of the way, I was like, oh, yeah, exactly what you said. People are people. If you're funny.
People are people.
If you're funny, you're funny. Oh, yeah, no.
Denver audiences are better than Ohio audiences. Nope. You don't know what you're talking about.
No.
People are people. Yeah. If you're funny, they're going to be a good audience. You know, I don't think I had the best show of my life in New Orleans. I was kind of fucking rusty. You know, even though I get on stage at the store, the hour was the big difference.
Yeah.
That hour is a big fucking difference. You know, 15 minutes I could do sleeping.
I did 12 hours and 14 days. And so I was sharp. Sharp.
So you did how many shows in over there in New Zealand?
Well, I was in Australia too.
So you did Australia and New Zealand.
Yeah. It was amazing, man. It was really cool. It was super humbling. You know, to think that I'm just doing my little fucking dumb shit over here and there are people over there that will come and excited. My show in Brisbane was a different experience for me altogether. I could feel that it was a different energy when I walked on stage. Like, those people were excited to be there. And it felt, I told them, like, this is top five show I've ever had. It's a different experience. It was amazing. It was really humbling, man. Because, you know, I've told you this before. I know the list of people I would leave the house to pay and go see. So the fact that I'm on somebody's list is humbling every time I step on the stage. Like, these people left the house to come see me.
And they got a babysitter.
Yeah, like, it blows my fucking mind. Think about who you would leave the house, honestly, to pay, bring your wife, and go see. It's not that big of a list. It's not that big of a list. So the fact that you're on somebody's list, that's why it bothers me when I hear people blame crowds. They came to see you, man. They came to see you. So they want you to do well. I don't like when people blame small crowds either, because those people also left the house to see you. So do your job. You know what I mean? It's super cool. It was really very humbling.
It's you know, you do stand up, you starve. I mean, you starve no matter what type of artist you are in the beginning. You know, I generalize and I say stand up because that's what I know about. But I still remember being an apprentice electrician and starving. An apprentice carpenter. You know, you starve for a couple of years until you fall in love with something. But listen, I really enjoyed my open mic life. Like, my mother died when I was a kid, but I got to tell you, I still had a great childhood. My open mic career, I consider it brilliant. I think until I spun my wheels till I was 29 years old. And before I got into comedy, I really fucking thought about it. Because I knew if I get into this and I failed, I was out of options.
Mm-hmm.
So when I picked this, the first 2 years, I didn't know what I was doing, you know, which nobody really knows. And then once I got a grip of what I wanted to do, and when I got an answer of what I wanted to do and where I wanted to take it, then I count that. Like, yeah, I started in 91, but I really started in October of 93. That's when I saw the big picture, and that's when I attacked it. And I could look you in the face and tell you that I did it the right way.
I was thinking about this the other day.
I was an open micer for 7 years.
Yeah.
With no qualms.
Yeah. I was thinking about this the other day.
With no qualms.
How many sets, when we first got to LA, for the first year, 2 years, how many sets a week you think you were doing?
I was doing 4 at the store, 1 at the Improv, 1 at the Laugh Factory.
And you did 2 or 3 of those funny mics somewhere around town.
Every night I did a Mexican room.
With Rudy and the...
With Rudy, either Rudy, Felipe.
Do you still have the notebooks of all the mics that you did?
Yes. I still have everything going back to 98.
I was thinking about how many mics we would... Yeah, that was the goal.
You know, when I lived in Boulder, I had to really work for sets, so it taught me a lot.
Like
every set was gold. It wasn't. There wasn't 4 sets a week on Monday. Mondays was the Outback. Way before Outback Saloon, this was the Outback Australian bar, and it was an Australian theme. And they had a stage. You think they put us on the stage? No. We were in the back in the sound room, 5 feet longer than this. And the room had, it was a rehearsal space with pads on the wall. So bands could rehearse in there while people were at the bar and they wouldn't hear them. And they would let me go up there. Andy Payton would put me on every Monday for 10 fucking minutes. So I learned how to treat those spots like gold. The Comedy Works only put you on once every 3 weeks for 3 minutes. There was that many open mics there, open micers. Wednesday I had a place. Thursday I had a place. And then Friday and Saturday I hustled guest spots. And none of the clubs liked me, so I wouldn't get guest spots. When I went to Seattle, we had the chubby chick on Mondays in Tacoma.
Yeah.
Very sweet. She just reached out to me.
She's great. Susan.
Susan. You had the Comedy Underground. And then we had that artsy fartsy bar with the cages.
Yep. But we also had...
Then we had another open mic on Tuesday.
Yep.
Now, if you don't think... I've thought about this a lot. You sent me a list a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
I showed on the podcast of with Brody, God rest his soul, and all this shit. That Monday-Tuesday open mic combination...
It was deadly, dude.
Was deadly.
Yeah.
Because we had 2 nights to come up with material.
Mm-hmm.
So if it didn't work Monday, Carl would give you another chance. So you used what worked, and then you threw in an extra minute. Because it was 6 minutes, right?
Yeah, depending on. Yeah, yeah.
Because they trained you for the Seattle Comedy Competition.
Yeah.
That's why they were doing 6 minutes to keep it for Seattle. So it was all 6 minute shots. I think the closer was 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So that was the deal. But that was one of the biggest educations I got.
Oh, not only that, if you remember, like, one-nighters were one-nighters. So we didn't... We weren't learning in 3 or 5 or 7 minute spots. When you went to Tacoma, when you went to Olympia, when you went up north to Everett, you were doing 15 minutes.
You were doing 15 and 35 minutes.
You were so...
Whether you had it or not.
No.
She would book you if you had 20 minutes... And you could improvise for 5. Laura Crocodile,
but you were getting up
Pat
there.
Pat Wilson.
The
we
MC,
were out every night.
MC had to do 15 minutes. So you would get on stage your 12th fucking time, and you had to stand up there for 15 minutes. And so it taught... That was a huge education. But it didn't prepare us to come here. Because I was used to having 15 minutes. And, you know, that first set at the store for 3 was like... With the lights on in that fucking room, you're like, what the fuck is going on? People, you know, you can see everybody. Nobody gives a fuck who you are. You thought you were the king of the hill. But when I left Seattle, I left with a little more confidence than I should have had. I mean, let's be honest. Because you think, since you're doing so well somewhere else, that you're just going to come here and pick up. Did you think you were kind of come up and, I mean, obviously I didn't think it was going to be the same, but I was going to be like, oh, I've been doing this for a little while. I'm part of the young guns of comedy. Like I'm going to come down here and of course I'm going to be at the store. No, you start, no matter who you are almost, you start over. You start over.
No, first of all, you lose 8 minutes because you have Seattle.
Yeah, material. Yeah.
That's the worst. And you come down and you're like, what about that judge? And you're like, what judge? And you're like, oh, shit. Yeah,
the Seahawk jokes don't work down here?
That's it. Now you got to you just lose 10 minutes when you move here. You lose 10 fucking minutes. When I came down here, When you came down here, I wished you all the luck in the world. I didn't think I was ready. I didn't have no real connections. I didn't know anybody. Then I started fucking around with the Latino Laugh Festival.
Yeah.
And they flew me down and that shit, then they didn't put me on. So that was my only experience. Like I told Pablo when he was here, I came down here, I saw Pablo do Seinfeld in Spanish, and yeah. I was like, I don't belong here. Let's get that out of the way. I'm just some fucking dirty comic. I accept that.
Yeah.
And then I came down here on a Monday, and Tuesday, I think you, me, and Gavin went to the Laugh Factory.
Yep.
And stood online.
Yep.
And then he told me, he goes, you're great, but you don't belong here. You're a cabaret comic. Get a van, go on the road, and do dirty jokes on the road. You'll make $1 million. I was crushed. I was crushed. Nobody knows that Jamie Masada. I got here on a Monday, and Tuesday night, I stood out there all day. Richard, whatever, brought us water.
Mm-hmm.
And we stood out there, me and Gavin, alternated, going over to the coffee shop in that mall downstairs, the Coffee Bean. If you cross the street from the coffee shop.
Yep.
It was completely different mall back then. That management company was there.
Lemley was still there.
Lemley was still there, but there was a Coffee Bean.
Yeah.
And I still remember my first day here, me and Gavin and you, I think it was just me and Gavin, went down there at 8, or you too, and then we had to come back at 6.
Yep.
But I still remember going across the street and seeing the guy that was really hot at the time. He did that movie with Paulie Shore, real good looking dude.
Brendan
Fraser.
Yeah.
We saw him at Starbucks. I had a Coffee Bean. I'm like, oh, shit. I'm at the right motherfucking place. Then all of a sudden, Richard Lewis pulled up and gave me water. I was like, oh,
dude,
I'm at the right place.
Do you know what? So he told you not to be dirty. Do you know what he told me? Don't talk about your kids. Nobody wants to hear you talk about your kids. That was the first thing he told me. And I was like, okay.
Dog, I fucking waited online all day. I waited in the sun. Then at 6 o'clock, they gave you the number. We ran home. I'm hyped. I was at the store the night before. Fucking Don Barris put me up at the store the night before because the black kid, what's the black kid that took us to a strip club in Seattle that time? And he rented a convertible Beamer. And he took us to that strip club and paid for that Eddie Griffin hated him.
The singer.
The singer. The singer came in as I was
used to wear the big fedora.
As I was talking to Don Barris.
Yeah.
He came in. He goes, hey.
James.
James Stevens III.
Yeah, thank you.
God bless him. And he came in. He
was a super nice guy.
Super nice guy.
Yeah, yeah.
He came on. He goes, when did you come down here? I go, just got here tonight. He goes, you want to go on stage? I go, fuck yeah. And he went up to Don Barris. There was two people in the audience. And this was my first L.A.
Hell yeah.
Premiere. Two people in the fucking audience. Died a slow. I had never seen two people.
Yeah.
So I got off the stage. I saw Wheels. I saw Eddie Griffin. I saw Tumak from The Last Dragon.
Yep.
And I was like, I don't know. This isn't going to work. And then that next Tuesday, I went to that Laugh Factory, bro, and I killed. I could look you in the face. It was 3 minutes.
Yeah.
I was just used to doing 6 minutes from Monday and Tuesday for 18 months.
Yeah.
You're not going to fuck with me.
No.
I went up there and I did 3 minutes. I ripped that room apart. And I waited on the line like, I'm going to be a regular here. And bro, I walked in there like, Jamie, how you doing? He's like, sit down, my friend. You're very funny, but you do not belong in LA.
Yeah.
You're too blue. You're a cabaret comic. You're not going to make it here. You cannot perform in my club. That was my wake up call to LA. And here I am 22 years later. That was my first day in LA. Like that guy cracking me. Like going home and being cracked.
But dude, you never changed.
No,
you never.
I saw Doug Stanhope.
Yeah, never changed.
And he goes, why the long face? And I told him, and he goes, fuck him. He don't know nothing about comedy. And he started breaking down the history of LA. And he was a doorman at the store, and he tried to copy Mitzi. I got nothing against Jamie. Jamie's a great guy.
Great guy. He is a great guy.
At the time, that was what it was. That's who I was at that time, you know?
Yeah.
And he told me, don't worry about the fucking Laugh Factory. I'll get you in at the Comedy Store. And sure enough, he called. I thought he was lying to me. You know how people tell you I'll call?
Mm-hmm.
A week later, I got a call from fucking Scott Day telling me you got a showcase.
Scott Day!
But it's going to be 6 months till you get the showcase because we're behind. And I'm like, fuck, I don't know if I'll make 6 months. 6 months.
How many times did you showcase for her?
Once. February 19th. I showcased on the 12th and for 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And she goes, can you do 10? And I go, fuck yeah. And a week later, I came on the 19th on a Sunday night. And she goes, call Scott tomorrow.
That's awesome.
You know, but this is Jimmy Masala telling me he hated me.
Yeah.
Now, somebody else would have gotten the car and left.
Yeah.
Somebody else would have said, that's the hottest club in L.A., because it was the hottest club at the time.
For a long time.
And look what happened. Monday nights weren't his night. They were a Purdue show.
Mm-hmm.
And the kid Gilbert got, you know, he's still alive. I owe Gilbert a lot and Rudy and those guys.
Yeah.
Gilbert would tell me, come by every Monday, I'm going to give you 20.
Gilbert?
And they would give you 25 bucks.
Yeah.
25 bucks was like fucking, oh my God.
Rudy used to give us a little money to drive out there too.
40 bucks.
Yeah.
40 bucks. And then you got the connection in Chino.
Oh,
where
yeah.
they gave you Coke till 4 in the morning. I came over to your house on a Monday, and you're like, you got to go to Chino. Those motherfuckers. And I'm like, how long is the drive? You're like, 2 hours. But it's worth it. Open bar.
Oh, my God.
Fucking blow.
He tried to pay me in hookers. I was like, this is not how it's working, man.
Yeah. No, it was.
You know, paying me in hookers. Yeah, it was crazy.
You were the one that was like, oh.
He was like, I'll pay you in hookers. I'm like, that's not how we're doing this. I can't, you know, my kids are kind of hungry. I can't be like, hey, here's the deal. I don't have food, but.
Do they still have that
gig? Smell my finger. You know what I mean? They still have that gig?
I was asking you if they still have
that. No, that dude's got to be in jail.
That guy's in jail.
And the first time I went out there with Danny Kelly.
That's right. That's right. It was Danny Kelly's hookup.
I went out there with Danny Kelly.
That Monday, you were talking to the guy, and everybody was planning a big show down there.
Huge.
He was like,
yo, that was
going to
be
him.
Yeah.
And all this
Luke
shit.
Luke Torres.
And I'm like, oh, boy. These guys.
Yo.
But we used to go to, even when I was a regular at the store, I don't know, what was the name of the open mic we went to? Okay, we used to go to the one on Barhan.
Yep.
Do you remember Barhan?
Yes.
Had the fucking library with the scripts.
Oh, my God.
And then, but you and Gavin and me, and there was somebody else, we used to go to a coffee shop.
But on Sunset?
Santa Monica Boulevard. Not Santa Monica, the city.
Yeah.
It was close to where you lived. It was where White Lightning had his little Jamaican bar.
Yeah.
What's that street? Larchmont. The end
now,
of
was it that far
yes,
down?
Yes, his Jamaican bar was at Larchmont.
But I do remember we also had the Union.
The Union, and we also had that place you got us in where we all ate a bag of dicks.
Yeah.
Except for the black guy with dreads. That fucking bar on Hollywood Boulevard.
Yeah.
No, in the middle. People still smoking there. I heard that if a cop goes in there, they spit in his face. And they throw cigarettes at him and shit. They had a balcony, and that's where we did comedy. And it was me, you,
back.
Corey Miller.
Yeah.
It was the black guy with the dregs.
Yeah, yeah.
No, it wasn't the pizza joint.
No, not a pizza joint. It was in Hollywood.
It was in Hollywood
or
in between.
What's it called? On Cherokee. It's on.
Yes,
yeah, yeah.
It's on Cherokee.
Yeah,
it's still there.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
Dive bar. You got us
in the
gig
back.
In the back. And I bombed, you bombed, and Corey Miller.
Yeah.
Fucking went up there and destroyed him, and I'm like, I got a quick cut.
How many rooms do you think that between you and I, we started and just got shut down in our time here? Because I made for a little while. That's how I made money, like that improv show that I did. Remember that one? And that and the Union. The Union was. The Union was a fucking the best.
But before the Union, you and I booked Tuesday nights at 11 o'clock at the Improv.
Yes.
And we would never get to go on. Right off the bat.
You and I
talked that lady into letting us book the Improv.
Yeah.
This is fucking 98.
Yeah.
And we would go down there and fucking wait, and then Damon Wayans would come in.
Always.
And bump us on Wednesday. We wouldn't get on till 1 o'clock. They said to us after the show, if you and Josh Wolf want, you go up there and do like a dirty show. And you could put a couple of your friends with the audience.
Yeah.
And they would go, all right, after the show, we got another show for you. Josh Wolf and friends. And the whole room would get up. And two lonely people would just sit there. And we'd be like, oh, this is going to be great. I remember telling managers,
oh,
to come
shit.
See me up there. And we had like
I remember
eight
that
people.
Too.
Do you remember I had two managers there one night,
yeah.
one on one side of the room,
yeah.
one on the other side of the room? And you're like, what the fuck are you doing? I'm like, I'm working both these
yeah.
managers. They're both going to sign me, and then I got to know it. I had agents coming
yeah.
down.
How, At one point in time.
I had three agents.
Yeah.
And nobody knew about each other. Whoever got the prize first got the commission. Yeah, got the money. That's it. I got to get three guys.
Yeah.
Like, one guy can't cover me because you're all a bunch of dumb fucks. So I got three guys. I got the breakdowns.
Yep.
And I just gave orders. I would get up at 6, fucking hungover from the night before, snorting coke. I get the breakdowns from Shooby Doob, and I just scroll them 80 fucking pages every morning and write down leads and send them to all three agents. So when they got in their office at 9 o'clock, they already had the submissions.
Yeah, we used to do those breakdowns,
and then you used to get them from Wendy Liebman's manager.
Yeah,
when Mitch Hedberg's girlfriend was the assistant for the fucking guy. What was that dude's name? Old guy. He's dead and buried. That guy died twice already. He was 80 when you were talking to him. He came to the show one day. I thought he was fucking the dude.
Oh, my God.
I thought he was Burns.
What was that guy's name?
I remember one day you're like, this might be my future manager. I go, Josh, he's 100 years old, this fucking guy. He was old. I represented Johnny Carson in 58.
Yeah.
He had Wendy. He had like four people who were pretty good.
But he had, like, you walked into his office and there was like Henny Youngman's headshot.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
What the fuck?
He had a picture of the Declaration fucking of Independence and could stand up. Yeah. He booked the show. This guy, he showed up with fucking dandruff on his. I'm like, Josh, the guy's got dandruff on his fucking
and
shirt.
And he was, by the way.
Segundo! Not Barry Segundo.
Oh, my God.
Barry Segundo.
And he had, like, he would wear, like, the like an old-ass cardigan.
Oh.
And it just was, the holes in it and shit.
You look back and you go, what the fuck convinced us to stay here? Who the fuck gave us permission to stay here? And remember, we came here, and for the first 18 months, we were on the level.
Yeah.
And then it just became a party. We were going on. Four nights a week.
Yeah.
And just fucking partying. What ever happened to those twins?
The twins?
I still remember walking into your house and Malia.
Oh, the twins.
The one twin on the balcony with candles. And I'm like, what's going on?
You talking about the one dude who was on Buffy?
Yes.
So I believe it's Nick and Kelly. And I don't remember his last name, but Nick was on Buffy. Nick, I think, got arrested not too long ago for something not great. You'd have to look it up. I forget. It was something where you were like, you know, some things people get arrested for, you're like, okay. But some things you're like, it was one of those. And Kelly disappeared. He just went, Nick, what was his name?
Nicholas Brendan.
Nicholas Brendan, thank you.
How many people did we actually see come and go?
Oh, man. Just look at that first picture of that very first set list that you sent me not long ago. The names that I recognize are Sully McCullough, me, you, and Dave Chappelle. And that was it. But you have to be able to ride out the storm. How many times did you think to yourself, dude, what the fuck am I doing here? How many times?
How many times did I bomb at the store and say, get in the car and go, that's going to be my last set?
Yeah.
Like, I'll never get another set.
Yeah.
This is not going to work out for me. Okay. I'm just going to snort coke till I die.
When people ask you, hey, I want to get into stand-up, what's your advice? The only thing I ever say is, get on stage. Because if you get on stage and it breaks you, then this is not for you. Do you know, that's it. The stage will tell you before you start writing a ton of material and shit and blah, get on fucking stage. Because that first time you might get on stage and be like, oh, fuck this. I've got enough rejection in my life. Like, I feel bad enough about myself. Because sometimes the stage is like, dude, when you used to get on stage at the Underground, how much were you looking forward to it? How much, like, when you saw your name on the list, you're like, fuck yes. That's when I knew, because I could not wait to do that 6 minutes. 8 o'clock
could not come quick enough.
Come on.
8 o'clock could not come quick enough. In those days, I don't know if you remember, we would meet at 6:30.
Yeah.
6:30. Our hearts were beating. You couldn't wait to kick down that door. And God forbid somebody came to us and said, we got another gig for you today. Because I'd come from Denver where there was a... Listen, bro. There's times I get a check now. from a residual, and I look at it and I go, that's fucking amazing. You know, I got the Mentalist last week. I did the Mentalist, what, 8 years ago?
Yeah.
And I still get like $100 residuals. And I look at those $100 residuals that are a lot of money.
Yeah.
$100 is a lot of money in today's economy. And I look at it and I go, what did I do to deserve this? You know, when I met Slash in 98, he goes, you're broke right now. Cherish this. Because this is what's going to keep you grounded 20 years from now. And boy, was he right. Because now I have justification. I didn't steal it. I didn't kiss nobody's ass for it.
Mm-mm.
I worked for this bitch. I went in. I auditioned. The Mentalist I got on Twitter.
Get out.
I put down. I took a picture of the audition with Stephen Bauer. I went to the audition. Steve Bauer was there. So I took a picture with Stephen Bauer and put it up and go, this is an audition of Mentalist. That night, I got a letter, an email from the author of the book. He goes, tell me what role you want. And me, the asshole, I go, just give me the little one because I've been looking for two mobsters.
Yeah.
I could have had the big role, but I wasn't greedy like that. I was like, just give me the little one that I read for. Two lines with the star.
But you've always just wanted to work.
Yeah. What is the purpose of being here?
Yeah. You've always just, but that was.
There's eight avenues to make a living here.
Yeah.
If you can't make a living, shame on you. I'm not a director. I'm not a producer.
Yeah.
I'm a comic. I could write. I could do VOs. I could do television. I could do movies. I got five ways to make a fucking income, Jack. Five ways. The last 2 weeks, I booked voiceovers. You know, I got five ways to make a fucking living. Shame on me.
Yeah.
Shame on me. Shame on me.
But what I mean is, but that's your goal. Your goal wasn't to be a big star.
Not at all.
No, that's
I don't want to be Kevin Hart.
But that separates, like, that's different.
I don't want any of that
no,
shit.
No, no, no. You've always just wanted to work. No, you've wanted to work.
I don't want to take pictures of the premiere.
Nope.
I don't want to do none of that shit.
Nope.
You know, this week is the rap party for the movie I did, the Soprano thing. And I've gotten 20 calls. And I love life. But I'm not getting a plane to go to.
Yeah.
I got a gig at the Ice House anyway.
Yeah.
I didn't get into this to go to parties.
No, I know you didn't.
I really
You've
didn't.
Said that a million times. I didn't get into this to go to parties.
And that's what separated me.
Yes, without
doubt. 200 people.
Yeah.
That they moved here and they tried to combine the party with the whatever. I'm what you call a functioning addict. I love to fuck around. I love to fuck around.
Yeah.
But at 7 o'clock, it's chop-chop.
Yeah. Yeah,
I don't know
yeah.
what you're talking about. I went to bed at 5. I've been snorting coke all night. So save your sob story for somebody else. You're dealing with the real fucking deal here. You're dealing with somebody way... You know, I took my uncle to the baseball game a couple weeks ago, to the Met-Dodger game.
Yeah.
The wife, the daughter, we all went, whatever. And the next day, he called me to thank me. He goes, that meant the world to me that you took me, after, especially after the relationship we've had. He goes, you've grown up to be a good kid and all this shit. And he goes, I got to tell you something. He goes, you know, for years, everybody said you look like your mother and your father. He goes, it came to me last night. You're your fucking grandfather. He goes, you know what your grandfather did for a living? He left the house every day at 6, and he picked up shit from the street, and he'd fix it and paint it, and then sell it for $50 worth over his value. He was a savage. He fed 9 kids. He bought a house here. He goes, and he just made enough, but he got up every morning, no matter what condition. He goes, he died with his stomach hanging out, but he'd still go out every morning when he was 70 at 6 and pick up garbage and fix this and fix that. And he goes, that's who you are, only at a higher level.
Yeah.
But that's where you started. That was in your DNA, that you got to get up. I don't give a fuck what you did last.
Yeah.
You don't mean nothing to me. Don't hit me with no excuses. You're sick. Listen, you're talking to the wrong guy. You're talking to the wrong motherfucker. I used to snort till 6. I still remember snorting and sucking at that Sunset, that dirty hotel across from the fucking Ralph's.
Yeah.
That they were doing now.
Yeah.
I still remember being in there and getting bit by a flea in the neck. And your neck is shit. You get those bed bugs.
Yeah.
And looking at my pager, and there was a call from Chuck Pagano, the casting director, that I'm running late for a callback for a James Coburn movie. Bro, I brushed my teeth, and I flew the fuck up there, and I booked the fucking movie. Straight off of coke. I woke up at 10, and the guy was supposed to be at Radford at 11 o'clock. He called me like at fucking 10 to 11. He goes, I don't see you out in the waiting room. You got to call back. You want this movie or not? I go, Doug, I forgot all about it. I looked at my eyes. I had those cocaine eyes.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm not going to get this, but I'm going up there. And I nailed it on fucking coke from robbing that fucking, I robbed the ski company. I was, do you remember the job you got me opening up for the ski company? Remember, yeah. First it was somebody else's and he gave it to you. Yeah,
Henry.
Who would gave
somebody
it?
Somebody Miller is the name of the
Warren
company.
Miller.
Warren Miller.
But then who did you work for? Who gave it to
Matt
you?
Matt Parrott.
Matt Parrott. Where is he?
You know what? I had two numbers for him.
He's gone.
I texted him.
Matt Parrott also got you the job writing on the Gong Show.
Matt Parrott looked out for me, man.
Matt Parrott, yeah, good guy.
Really good
dude. Matt Parrott
and
had
still
the
buddies with Billy Gardell.
Is he?
Yeah.
So he still sees Billy. So,
but I've been trying to find him, but I heard
he gave you the job.
Yeah, a couple
for,
of them.
And you did it for 2 years.
Yeah.
Warren Miller.
Yeah.
Then they gave it to me. I think it was $800 a night.
Yeah, it was pretty good money, man.
It was good money.
Yeah.
It was $800 a night. They gave you one check to cover 3 weeks.
So
and
good.
Then you had to wait. But there were two young kids from like college, from Boulder. And I'm watching them like, oh, dude. I'm seeing that they're charging $20 at the door. And they're counting cash afterward and putting it in an envelope. And I'm like, oh, these motherfuckers. I'm like, these two idiots are going to go down. They don't know that I'm a master of deception. So I did the 2 weeks up north. Remember you had to start up north?
Yeah.
And then you worked yourself down to Carlsbad and San Diego.
Whose car were you driving at the time?
Terry's.
Got it.
The green Dodge that was a piece of shit that the speedometer would just go around in circles when you hit 25.
Yeah.
We were broke as fuck.
Yeah.
800 a fucking night. And she was going down with me to make sure I brought the check home. Like the first time I told her, I'm picking up $8,000. She's like, I'm going with you.
Yeah.
And we stopped.
That's probably pretty smart.
Bakersfield and bought a TV. I still got that TV.
Get the fuck out
of here. I will not let her get out of that TV. That's the first TV I bought with the sweat of comedy.
Does it still have, is it thick?
$200. You can't pick it up.
It's one of those thick, yeah.
Oh, you can't, fucking Hercules can't pick that TV.
Do you still watch it?
Yeah, it's in the bedroom.
Get the fuck out of here.
I refuse to, I go, you don't know how much, we still got the original VCR too that we bought on
that trip. Does it work?
Yep.
You use it?
Yep, the CD, it's in the bedroom. Oh, Mercy has it. A CD player.
That's amazing.
And it still works. We stopped in Bakersfield in the Neon.
Yeah.
The Neon, and we put the TV in the trunk like Puerto Ricans.
With yeah, it was hanging out.
Hanging out on the five, coming home. And I'll never forget that when I was down in Carlsbad with her, we went to a Kmart to buy clothes. And when we walked out, socks and white underwear and all that shit, that's how broke I was, to buy socks. And when we walked out, there was a burrito lady walking around in the parking lot. And I bought two burritos and two tamales. And after I bit the tamale, I go, we got to go back. We made a U-turn on the five, went all the way back and bought the lady out. That's how good the tacos, that's how fat of a fuck I was. I bought the lady out with the money from Warren Miller. But, so now I work Thursday, Friday, and I'm watching them. They got sold out crowds. I'm watching them put this money in the sack. I'm watching them put it in the Nissan truck. They're fucking every night. It's adding up. It's adding up. And finally Sunday, I watched them, and I'm like, how am I going to steal that fucking dough? And I watched it get counted because you had to go up and host in the beginning. And then go up in the middle and do a raffle.
Yeah.
Give away skis and a movie by Warren Miller. And I went in and I seen the kid put the fucking thing in. And then he went to the passenger side, the driver's side of his Nissan truck and put it right behind the seat and closed the door and then went tick, tick. And he put his keys in his jacket. But guess what? A hot little girl walked in with a miniskirt and he was drooling all over. Like, he's like, what can I do for you? So he went to a bar and I washed his jacket. He didn't take his jacket. And while he was at the bar, I took his car keys and I went outside. I went click, click. And I put the car keys back in his pocket and I went and got the Neon and I drove all the way around the corner. I parked right next to his truck. I climbed into the passenger side of the Neon, opened my door and opened his passenger door and I just stuck my hand in there. And took whatever I could in one chunk. I just took a handful of bills, closed the door, and I fucking went down the corner and put it in the trunk under the tire in case the cops pulled me over.
I went back to work.
I went back in and did the raffle. And then they're like, we don't have to work because they would give you a hotel.
Yeah.
So they said, we don't have to work tomorrow. So I go, I'm going back. Love you guys. Yeah. See you later. And I fucking just drove till I passed the immigration. And I pulled over and I stopped counting at 1,000. And there was still a stack of dough left. And I go, fuck this shit. And I shot right up. It was a Sunday night. I went right to the Comedy Store and I saw the man. And he goes, what do you want? Five of them? I go, no. Give me everything. He goes, Joey, I got like 20 of them. Give me everything. And he gave me every package. And I went to that fucking hotel across the street from Sunset.
Oh, my God.
And just started snorting up a fucking storm. He called 2 days later. Hey, man, did you see anything suspicious that night out there? I did see a fucking weird dude. I don't know if he was black or Puerto Rican. Walking out there. You got to throw the racist card in there.
Yeah, yeah.
And he goes, yeah, I saw that black dude. Boom, I was off the suspicion list. And then that Tuesday, I had like 10,000, whatever the fuck I had. There was another gig in Ontario, and I just called him and said, I can't make it.
Hey, did you come down and visit me on that set, the Prefontaine set?
Yeah, and we almost robbed that joint.
Yeah.
We had a deal. We were going to rob the car.
With the raffle.
With the raffle. We were going to plant somebody in the audience and give them a raffle ticket.
I was working, the movie was Prefontaine, and I was doing crowd work in the stadium scenes.
In Eugene.
In Eugene, Oregon.
Eugene, Oregon.
So they would give you stupid game to control a stadium full of people. Is just ridiculous. But you would do big, stupid games, or you would raffle off cool prizes.
What happened to her?
What was her name? The redhead.
The redhead and the other.
She got me that job.
Yes. And then they came down here with us.
Yeah.
And then she auditioned me a couple times.
What was her name?
At the park. I read for her at the park one day.
What was her name?
There was the one good-looking one and the redheaded one. The brown-head one had like hair to the side with glasses.
I don't remember her at all. I remember the redheaded girl.
They were very good to us.
Yeah, she was really nice. I wish I remembered her name. I guess I stopped hearing from her somewhere around 98, I would think. 99. 99, probably. 99.
That's what people have come and gone.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, it's been 4 months. How do you feel about Brody now? I thought you were going to ping me a picture of Brody tonight. Somebody gave me a picture. Some artist drew pictures of Brody for everybody.
Yeah.
And he dropped them off at the store, and the guy gave it to me. And I put it in my back seat without looking at it. And the other night, I went to the car, and I found it. And I almost had a fucking heart attack. But now I'm mad at Brody. Well, I'm at the anger period with Brody right now. Like, I don't even want to see his fucking face. Like, when I saw that picture, I'm like, that was just a mask you were wearing.
Yeah.
Like, now I found myself angry at fucking him for some reason.
I go the other way. I feel sorry for him. I feel sorry for him, you know.
I felt sorry from the beginning.
Yeah.
And I knew this would happen.
Yeah.
I'm that type of guy, because I even got mad at my mother for a while. Like, I got mad at my mother for dying. So why wouldn't I get mad at
Well, Brody listen, you're the first person who ever said, remember when we were in Seattle when Cobain killed himself? And you were, when people were mourning and all that shit, right? You were like, why are they mourning? Let me grab it. Why are they mourning that coward? You were like, fuck that guy. Like, you were legit. It was the first time I had ever heard someone say, like, why are they mourning this fucking guy? Like, he chose. It was the first time I'd ever heard anyone say that. So, but I still don't get mad. Like, for Brody, I feel bad just knowing that he had that mask that whole time. Just knowing he was living with that shit all the time. That's tough for me.
Open that door a little bit, brother. It's getting hot, man. What did I say? When he shot himself, I was in Boulder. And I still remember that I had bought a batch of Coke that week. And I was so greedy, I cut it with not cut. I don't remember what I cut it with. But when I went to take it to the guy's like, this isn't what I wanted. This is yours. And I learned a big lesson not to cut Coke with like fucking weird shit. But I wasn't going to throw away the Coke. So I started snorting the Coke, and I swear to God, by the end of the week, I had like Batman marks.
Oh,
like,
no.
Both of these were raw. Like, it was just pink skin. I couldn't even leave the house. This was all burnt because whatever powder I put in there burnt the outside of my nose and it dripped.
Where did we get Coke in Seattle? I don't remember. We weren't getting it from Lionel, right? Oh, you know where I was getting it? Remember that waitress? Sharon.
We were getting it from a couple different people. I was getting coke from Seattle. Lionel was getting it from that one. Then I got arrested. When I got arrested one time for the stolen car in Seattle, that drug dealer came up to me. And he goes, when you got arrested, did you say anything? And I go, what are you talking about? I didn't get arrested for drugs. He goes, well, ever since you got arrested, I see cops in my rearview mirror. So I'm like, listen, you're just reading too many comic books.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Nobody, it was a stolen car, beef. There was nothing to talk about. They didn't even talk to me, the cops. What are you talking about? They let me out. They, the dealership in Everett said, oh, we found the fucking car. It's not stolen. They let me out of there. But I remember, like, he was a burly guy. There was a bunch of drug dealers up there. I was in bad shape up there.
Yeah.
Like, I was in really bad shape up there. Now you think back at it. But it's just really weird. The other day I saw that picture of Brody, and I'm like, fuck. I'm kind of angry at him. That thing he had on was just a mask the whole time. He was broken inside.
Yeah, but so how can you be mad at somebody who's broken like that? You know what I mean?
He let me down. He broke my heart. It's like a girl breaking your heart. I don't care how much you love him. When she breaks your heart, the first 2 months, you're kind of angry. He broke my heart. He broke my heart on a fucking Friday before a gig. You're going to kill yourself. Kill yourself on a Sunday. Give me a couple of days to fucking recover. You're going to kill yourself on a fucking Thursday night before all the comedians have to work on Friday. So I'm actually, that's the reason why.
Yeah.
I'm mad at him because he killed himself on a Thursday night and he fucked up my Friday. He made me test my wit by going on stage.
That was tough.
You know, I love him with all my heart. I hope God has him in his hand, you know, and he's curing him. But for right now, I'm a little angry. I was mad at Ralphie, too, for a couple days. You know, you knew you were heavy, and you're eating those jalapeno poppers.
But he wanted...
Yeah, no, there was two different stories and stuff.
Here's the thing with Brody for me, is that I actually thought about him also when I was in New Zealand.
Sure you did. I think about him every time I'm on the road.
Yeah, and... it's one of the things that made me so grateful. It's one of the reasons that I called you, because you and I started together, and it was important for me. I didn't call anybody else. I didn't call Beth. That wasn't something I needed to share with her, but it was something I needed to share with you, because we've been doing this since basically our day ones. So who else would I tell that? And the reason I thought of Brody is because he was the other person I would have called to say, this is a fucking amazing experience. Look where we all are. So it made me think about him a lot.
Have you ever on stage and say to yourself, wow, I'm doing this because of the work I did in 95 and 96? Do you ever see that?
I do see. Not while I'm on stage, doesn't that?
I see that. When I'm on stage and I'm smooth, I'm like, this is because of the work I did in 95 through 99. I worked really hard. I think I worked really hard till 2002, where I remember I came to LA, bombed one night, and said, fuck it, I'm going on the road. I can't be talking this nonsense. I got to go on the road, hide, and come back another level.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what I did. I came back another level because I was on the road for 8 fucking months. Every night you're on stage. Every night. Big show, little show, bar show.
What makes you sharp?
When
sharp
you get to a town, comics will say, hey, I got a one-nighter in Poughkeepsie. It pays $100 tomorrow night. And you're like, wow, I didn't expect that. Now I could stay in a hotel and eat, you know. Like, that's the fucking challenge. That's part of the fucking journey, is to see what's out there. What's behind the fucking corner.
Yeah, but you can also tell somebody, well, you could before, who had spent some time on the road. You could tell.
Well, you could tell.
Yeah.
You could always tell.
Just the difference also, but if you craft your set 3-5 minutes at a time, like you have to do here, 7 minutes at a time. It's a different than going on the road and crafting your set out there.
Right. No, the road material and LA material, two different shows. The road is something completely different. You can experiment and take it out a little deeper.
Yeah.
Here in LA, you have to cut it down to what they know. There's more universal, whatever the fuck.
The best thing about Seattle too, Joe, was that we experimented a lot. Like there was a sense of just get up there and do whatever the fuck you want to do. You know what I mean? There was zero judgment. There were some weird motherfuckers that came to that open mic. There were some weird fucking people who came to that open mic.
It was a mental health thing that I didn't see then. Now you look back on it. The kid with the handcuff that ended up killing himself.
Yeah.
You know,
Rita O.
Rita O. God rest her soul. There was a lot of people up there.
God.
That the open mic was a mental health.
Do you remember that guy who used to do impersonations?
Yeah. Oh, we cracked him.
And every time he did an impersonation, he would turn his back to you and he would go, okay, this is my impersonation of Denzel Washington. And he'd turn his back and then he'd turn around and do it. And then there was and then you said to him,
do an impersonation of a comic.
Yeah.
And his fucking soul cracked.
Fucked him up. And do you remember that other dude who did impersonations, but he naturally sounded like Jimmy Stewart? So every impersonation just sounded like Jimmy Stewart doing an impersonation.
Right.
And we were like, hey, why don't you do a Jimmy Stewart impersonation? He was like, nah, I don't do that very well.
You know
like,
who's in town this week?
What the fuck are you talking about?
But I'm thinking of going.
Count Hopkins.
Give him a hug. Is he?
No, but he was in Seattle not too long ago.
No. Brad Upton.
He's funny, man.
As Flappers, I think Saturday.
Is he really?
I'm going to stop by.
He's fucking funny.
He was very good to me.
Yeah.
For a guy that, you know, when a comic is very clean, they avoid you like the plague. And they make a judgmental move that they don't want to follow you or be around
yeah.
you. He was a guy that was spotless, funny, professional, the real deal. And he encouraged me. He used to encourage me to go off. Go off. I don't give a fuck. Go off. So those people like that, that's all part of this fucking journey.
Yeah.
You know, you, me, Brody, Tana, you have those memories in your heart forever. Plus, the most important thing, no matter what happens, when I go on stage and I bomb, bro, I don't get depressed. I look for bombs. Because on the way home, I know I did the work.
Mm-hmm. Well, you
and
have
at
to
the
bomb.
End of the day, that's the most important thing. People know when you're going to have bad sets. And you have to understand that. But I always know that no matter what happens, whether I do the podcast, that I always did the work. You know, I see what I do when I do a movie now. I could just quit stand up and act. I'm not going to make any money, but I'm good at it now mm-hmm. because I've been doing it for 20 years in 1,000 different situations. You know, I did $100 a day movies. I did General Hospital. I did all these different types of stuff. And now I go on a fucking set and I'm unstoppable, but I did my time.
Yeah.
Like I ate shit and I did the co-stars and hey, don't park there. You know, all those stupid, you know, like shit that nobody's going to see. But you still do it just to learn, just to get the experience. When do you go to Europe?
I go to the UK in July.
July what? You don't know?
It's on my website, comedianjoshwolf.com.
Okay. Go to comedianjoshwolf.com.
New York City this following weekend, 21st and 22nd at Gotham.
So not Father's Day?
No, I'm flying back here Father's Day.
Okay, where are you this weekend?
I do Charlotte on Thursday, Atlanta on Friday, Nashville on Saturday.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a nice little schedule.
Yeah, it's right there, too. Those are easy trips. No. They're just tiny little like theaters, and I'm with Sarah Tiana.
Okay, good. So these guys will come out and see you.
Yeah.
I love to Sarah Tiana.
Yeah, she's the best.
It's good to see you.
I'm
happy you made time for me. I'm happy you called from New Zealand because it made me realize how lucky I was and that we've been in this struggle since 95. But it doesn't matter whether you're Kevin Hart. Doesn't matter. I didn't go out and start this to be Kevin Hart. I started this to be Joe Diaz, and I didn't care whether I failed as long as I know that I tried. So thank you for reminding me of what we got. And don't forget, Saturday the 15th, I'm at the motherfucking Ice House. And then the 28th through the 30th, I'm at the Funny Bone in Columbus, Ohio, with my man Steve motherfucking Simone. Before I leave, I want to talk to you people about give some shout-outs to my sponsors here. Listen, picking a reliable CBD company is like, you know, what the fuck? You know, they're all everywhere. Everybody's got billboards. You're trying this out. You go to the weed store, you're trying that out. Lucky for you motherfuckers, I found CBD Lion. They make CBD products from start to finish. Do you understand me? Start to finish. CBD Lion has you covered. You know why? Because they come in a vape. They come in cartridges. They have shatters. They got gummies. And they got the tincture. All you got to do is what I do. Put it under your fucking tongue. Let it sit in there for 30 seconds. Bam! You sleep like nappy noo-noo time. Their products are fucking clean, Bobby. And they're not like the fakes making fucking false advertisements. Go to CBDLion.com and check out the third-party lab results yourself. You know Uncle Joey don't fuck around. especially when it comes to this stuff. I'm 56. I got pains you never even fucking heard before. I put two of these things under my tongue. The next day, I'm flying around like fucking Peter Pan. You understand me? I suggest you go to CBDLion.com right now. Press in church at checkout and get not 10%, but 20% off your order. Who does that for you? Nobody. Uncle Joey does it for you. CBDLion.com. The best CBD Lion, the best CBD product money can fucking buy, and you're getting 20% off from your Uncle Joey. I also want to thank Onnit. Listen, when it comes to supplements, nobody does what Onnit does. You know why? Because their flagship product, if you don't like it, they don't even want the product back. They give you a 100% money back guarantee. When you go buy Coke, you don't like the Coke, they give you a guarantee. No, you did a line. Onnit don't even want it back. They just tell you, keep it, you fuck. That's why I believe in their company. That's why I've been working with them for 7 years. And it's not just that. It's the Shroom Tech. It's the Shroom Tech Immune, the Shroom Tech Sport. This is phenomenal fucking supplements. Go to Onnit.com and then check out, press in.
Church.
I'll get you 10% off your order delivered right to your house. Uncle Joey's here to take care of you, whether it's CBD, whether it's supplements, we got you. I want to thank Onnit. I want to thank CBDLion.com. I want to thank Josh Wolf. But most importantly, I want to thank you motherfuckers for having my back. And I'm very sorry about Atlanta. I will get a makeup date and let you guys know as soon as it comes in. That's it. And that's that. You'll fucking hear from us on Wednesday morning. Tip Top Magoo. I love you motherfuckers. I want to thank Josh. I want to thank the fucking Flying Jew. But like I said, I want to thank you guys. I'll see you Saturday night at the motherfucking Ice House, 7:30, Tip Top Magoo. Stay black. Kick this fucking Mule Lee.
I wanna be around to pick up the pieces when somebody breaks your heart. Somebody twice as smart as I. A somebody who will swear to be true as you used to do with me. Who'll leave you to learn that misery loves company. Wait and see. I mean, I wanna be around to see how he does it when he breaks your heart to bits. Let's see if the puzzle fits so fine. That's when I'll discover that revenge is sweet. As I sit there applauding from a front row seat. When somebody breaks your heart like you.